You are listening to WSCA 106.1. This is Black Knight Meditations. Friday nights, 9 p.m. until 1 a.m. 4 hours of underground heavy metal music. Black death, speed, thrash, gothic, doom, shred, power, prog, folk, and traditional. Send me an email. Let me know what's on your mind. BNMradio at live.com. At BNM Metal Radio on Twitter. Festival is the name of the song from Them. The LP is Sweet Hollow. Perfect timing, as I've got vocalist Troy of Them on the phone right now to talk about all things sweet and all things hollow. Troy, how's it going?
Okay, Mark, how's it going?
Snow. I mean, really, this is getting ridiculous. We're in March now, and I was talking to Carl Kennedy of the Rods earlier this evening, and we're both ready for bikini weather. Not bikinis on us, but bikinis on the ladies. I'm sure you're ready for it, right? Are you a typical metal guy? You need the snow.
Nah, I don't like the snow. I'd rather sweat than freeze any day.
Oh, really? Oh, see, actually, I'm more of a typical metal guy. I prefer the snow. I like the cold weather. But I guess I'm just sick of it now, this back and forth. It's 70 degrees. It's 20 degrees. Out of hell with it. I just want it over with. But yeah, I'm ready for bikinis. What the hell? Let's do it. So you're the mastermind of Them. And we're going to talk about, again, all things sweet and hollow. And so since Them is, I don't want to say, it's not necessarily a new band, but as far as a band that is, let's just say, on the rise. How about that? So for those who don't listen to Black Knight Meditations very much because we've been spinning the record, how about this? I'm going to put you on the spot here and ask you a kind of a different question to describe Them. Let's say, if you had to say that your band Them is a heavy metal version of a movie, what movie would that be?
Ooh.
Yeah, I got you on that one.
That's a really good one. It would have to be, definitely be a horror movie.
Okay, that narrows it down, I would say.
Horror movie.
And the people who are listening, who were just listening to Festival, you know, and they've heard me play the songs on air before and talk about the band, and I'm sure they've probably got a pretty good idea. But you know what? I couldn't come up with one that was accurate.
It would actually be clips of several movies put together.
So you stitch something together. All right.
It would be piecemeal. There wouldn't be one particular movie.
So
it's more of... it's a story that takes place in the 1800s, so anything that revolves around death and exorcisms and blood.
Sounds like blood. Heavy metal, man.
Yeah.
So this album, Sweet Hollow, has been out for a little bit. It's not been out for too long, and we've been spinning it here at the station. I dig it. You know, when you do interviews, and those of us who read interviews, so often interviewers will ask you guys, how has the response been to your record? And, you know, the artists always say, oh, the response has been great, and I'm not doing that. But I'm going to flip it on you, and how about on the flip side, what has the response been that absolutely puzzles you where you're like, what the hell album did they even listen to? I mean, was there anything where they just savagely trashed your album? I mean, did you think that maybe they mixed your album up with somebody else? Or did somebody say it was the album of the decade? Anything shocking you've heard about the Sweet Hollow record?
Yeah, sure. In the beginning, before the album was actually released, we received a number of mixed reviews. And I think a lot of people, some of the critics, I should say, didn't understand the history of the group, didn't know the history of the group, and then automatically penned us as a King Diamond clone. And they would, you know, then they have, if they posted these reviews online, then you'd have other people that would make comments saying, oh, yeah, you know, even though they only heard one song off the record, they say, oh, yeah, they're King Diamond clone, they're King Diamond clone. And at first, I got upset. But then, you know what? Everybody has their own opinion. I know that they didn't listen to the whole entire record. If they listened to the whole entire record, they would understand. They would understand that it isn't a King Diamond clone. And there's actually good reason why some of the songs have some King Diamond influences. And that's because the band itself paid homage to King Diamond in the very beginning as a King Diamond tribute back in 2008 until 2011. And then the band stopped being a King Diamond tribute and decided to write music touching upon some influences of King, but King Diamond isn't the only influence for any of us. I mean, we, you know, we like all different types of music and, you know, rock and metal, and, you know, we just listen to everything. Actually, if you listen to another group that I've been in for a good part of my life called Cold Steel, I don't even sound like King Diamond. You know, I sound completely opposite. I have a really low and gruff voice. I was able to sing in a similar fashion, using some of the similar voices to King. I love King Diamond as an artist. He's a mastermind. I never once, with this project, never once did I ever try to think about replacing him. You know, that's King. King is, there's only one King Diamond. We're different. And how we're different is that every single aspect of the story, the characters, my character, who I portray in the band, my character's name is K.K. Fosser. His real name is Klaus Koenig Fosser. And every single thing has detail. Every single thing has origin. That's a major difference between King Diamond. If people know, diehard King Diamond fans know the history behind King himself, know certain things that just came out of thin air. There might not be, when he writes his stories, there's great detail, and they're fantastic stories, and he's a mastermind storyteller. But, you know, just like his name, how his name came about, just how he, you know, why he looked the way he did, there really wasn't origin behind it, aside from his religious beliefs initially. But when my character is in full form, there's an inverted Celtic cross burned on in his face, and I perform live like that, okay, as the character. And there's reason for that. It's not just because, hey, look, I'm wearing, you know, an inverted Celtic cross on my face. In the story, he loses his whole entire family in the very beginning of the story, and the reason why he was the story actually begins with him resurrecting his baby. He's a family man, okay? He's a grave digger by trade, but he's a warlock by faith. And his wife, and his older daughter are mourning the loss of their the baby. And the story opens up to him trying to resurrect his baby because he's trying to use his powers to bring his family back, to bring his loved one back. And it kind of backfires because it's like the townsfolk, they, back in the 1800s, they don't understand that. They view it as evil, and they storm the area. They destroy the baby. He's actually successful in his resurrection during his incantations. And they destroy the baby. They capture him, bring him to town square, and put him on trial for raising the dead. And they during his trial, they burn his wife, Alyssa, and they burn his daughter, his older daughter, Miranda, alive at the stake. They make him watch as they kill them. And then to make sure that he carries the family shame for the remaining days on earth, they brand him with the mark of evil on his face. And that's how the story begins. And he winds up going on a journey. And Sweet Hollow in itself is one leg of the journey. We're actually planning on at least another two records. The second record we're coming out in 2018. It's going to be titled Manor of the Seven Gables. And it's a continuation. It's not, you know, like I said, it's not a trilogy story. It's one story, and think of it as three acts to a play. Some critics actually have labeled us as like a rock opera, heavy metal opera, and mainly because live we inject theatrical elements to help, you know, to help assist in telling the story live while we perform. So it's very visual. There's a lot going on. We have actors and actresses that assist us, and they have certain roles. And it's a lot of fun watching the audience trying to focus on one particular thing, guitar solo, you know, singing, drumming, whatever. And then you have actors and actresses coming out and, you know, portraying their roles and doing what they do on stage and with our props and you know, all the different types of theatrical elements we have. People are pretty shocked. And we've gotten great reviews for live performance already. And we're just looking forward to continuing the trek of releasing the next record.
Well, I wasn't going to go the route of, you know, bringing up King Diamond. I think you probably get that enough as it is. But since you brought it up, I will say what I have to say about that and move on. And I think that the whole King Diamond thing, I mean, you know why that is. When anybody is going to just scratch the surface, just look at it based on what it is, and even listen to your vocals at times, you're going to get those comparisons. I mean, there's no way around that. I mean, obviously, you know your music, you know the story, you know everything behind it, but when people just judge it basically judging a book by its cover, you're going to get that comparison. I'm sure you understand that. Of course, people are going to do that. And even if they only hear one song, or like you were talking about in the live setting, if they see pictures and, you know, those comparisons are going to happen. But then again, it's going to be tough to do something like that and not have a comparison. I mean, like Lizzie Borden and Alice Cooper, you know, how does he get by all those years ago? And even to this day of saying, oh, well, you're just doing what Alice Cooper. I mean, it's like, it's going to happen. And there's really, really no way around it. Just, I guess, just do what you do and stand behind it, because that's ultimately what matters. And hell, I don't care. And frankly, for the record, there's nothing wrong with having a King Diamond influence. It's not like you guys are the only band out there that has a sound that's similar. I mean, I think that's perfectly fine. Trust me, man, I'd rather you sound like almost exactly like King Diamond than some of the other crap that's out there. So no problem there. Given that you mentioned the theatrical element to your music, obviously. Yeah, just a wee bit, right? Is it possible to have a them live show, you guys in concert, is it possible to do it? Well, I know it's possible, but would you do it without any staging, no outfits, no acting, no anything? Are you willing to simply walk on stage in t-shirts and jeans and guitars, or is it full show or no show at all?
That's a great question. In my opinion, it's full show.
Well, okay.
And the reason being,
all right, go ahead.
I've been in other bands. I played in various original bands. I really pushed my band Cold Steel for many years. And that's what it was. T-shirt, jeans, get up on stage.
Yeah.
And just, you know, you rock out.
Yeah, we spun the America Idol EP when it came out. We got that a few years back. I remember that, sure.
Yeah, so, I mean, I have no problem doing that. And I've done that. And I'm actually, the funny thing is, before, we're actually doing a tour in May. But when I'm before the tour, I'm actually playing, I'm doing some King Diamond and Merciful Fate songs with a friend's band, Blackjack Shellac, local act in the tri-state area. And we're going to play some songs, and I'm not going to go up with any makeup, you know, just jeans, t-shirt, you know, and just you know, just jam with them. But you see, in order to do that, that's what it is. It's, you get a bunch of guys playing music. That's great. But with what this act is, this is deeper. It's because of the performance element. I have to be in a certain state of mind when I do this, when I go on the stage, because it's not me. I mean, I don't talk the way I speak. And I'm speaking right now. I talk completely different. I sing completely different. I interact with the audience completely different. It will not be effective if I do not have the costume on, if I do not have the gear on. And the other band members, too, they do not go up with jeans and a t-shirt. They all have particular, it's almost like a uniform. But one thing that was very important, I wanted to make sure in the beginning, the actual inception of the band in an original form, I wanted to make sure that nobody's wearing masks. I wear actually a facial prosthetic that goes on, you know, that goes on my face, coupled with, you know, blending of makeup. It looks like it's part of my face. But the other band members do not wear anything on their face. It was very, very important to me to make sure that when they're performing, they can connect with the audience. It was very important to me, myself, even though I'm portraying another character, this fictitious character, I can actually connect with the audience as well. You can't do that with a full face mask. It's very difficult. And there are bands that pull it off, and they're you know, some of them are huge and tremendous, and that's great. But I specifically wanted to make sure that people could see your facial expressions, the audience can see, you know, you looking at them, you connecting with them, because that is very important. I truly believe that when a band performs live, there's this energy that is emitted from the band. The energy is received by the audience, and the audience gives it back to the band. So there's this constant cycle of energy. It's like a ball of energy that goes back and forth. And the energy doesn't really truly traverse correctly if the crowd cannot connect with the band. So that's, you know, this is why this is why I feel it's so important, because I've analyzed so many, you know, shows, and I've watched and I've just observed, and this is what I came up with.
So it sounds like, and it makes sense that if it's full show or no show at all, that it would be no show at all. I mean, it sounds like if Mustaine wants you as an opener for his Gigantor run of, you know, he usually takes out about 4, 5, 6 bands or whatever, and he wants you guys, but you can't do the show, you'd have to pass on it. I mean, a great opportunity. It sounds like it's either the full show or no show at all, regardless of the circumstances. Do you think that show and presentation aside, though, granted, you've already addressed that it's either one or the other, but do you think just the music itself, without the stage presentation, without the prosthetic, without anything, those songs can stand alone by themselves?
I'm sorry, say that again?
Do you think the songs can stand alone by themselves, period? I mean, does there have to be, and I'm not necessarily talking, I'm trying to get a sense of where you draw the line between it's a song versus it's theater. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, I know exactly what you're saying, and I totally believe that the songs can stand on their own. Before the theatrical elements, before the conceptual design, it's all about the music. The music is the first and foremost, most integral part of the whole entire project. The music has to stand out on its own. And so I actually compiled a group of musicians that can actually pull it off, you know, great musicians, great players. And nowadays, you know, especially when you deal with people that are well-versed in their instrument, they're busy. You know, they go, they're in different groups, sometimes multiple groups. Some of them do it for a living. Some of them do it as supplemental income. Some of them just do it as a means of expressing themselves. Whatever the case may be, it's very difficult nowadays to have one guy playing a guitar, one guy playing a bass, and they're only playing with you and your group and your act, unless you bring the act on a higher level, which hopefully it happens with us. But if it doesn't, we're actually very happy with, you know, what we've been doing, the reaction, the response, good or bad, we love it all. And we're doing it because this is something that we feel and we want to relay it. But like you said, the music is very, very important. And that's rule number one. And if you speak to one of the guitar players, or actually both of our guitar players, that's what they say. Rule number one, it's music first. People have to love the music. If they don't love the music, everything else is pointless.
Agreed, but then again, I'm also one of those metalheads where, of course, if I go see somebody with a stage presentation, a show, that there's more than just the music, I'm one of those that I can take that element away and still enjoy just the music. Like, you know, Kiss is my all-time favorite. I don't need the makeup and the big show and the big explosion. I can just see the four guys on stage in T-shirts and jeans and do the songs, because ultimately the music has got to stand on its own without everything else. That's not to take away from the entire presentation. But for me as a fan, you're right. I mean, if the songs don't come across on their own, I don't think everything else, the theater, is really going to save the music, if you will.
Right.
So let's say you book a run of headline dates. Let's keep to the live aspect here. Let's say you book a run of headline dates, and you're able to take out a few other bands with you. You know, circumstances aside, let's just say you can do that, and you got a package tour, and this is totally up to you guys, and you can choose who you want. I mean, do you, based on what you do, do you want to aim for similar bands of your band? Do you want to have bands on the bill that people who like them would also like bands that have a similar-ish type sound, like, say, Attic or a Tortured Soul or something like that? You know, kind of like Overkill and Testament toured together with Flotsam and Jetsam recently. Or do you want, because of what you do, bands that aren't like them whatsoever, completely different, for a different kind of experience for a concert? I mean, which do you have a preference? Do you know what I mean? Like, go one extreme or the other?
Well, I don't think, if you ask the question to anybody in our group, I don't think we would have a preference one way or another.
That's cool.
We just, last year, our first trek out, we were actually direct support for the band Helloween. And Helloween, they're a power metal band. Some critics have labeled us as a power metal band, which is fine. It doesn't matter. We're a heavy metal group. So, but we play differently than Helloween. And when we went out, people had no idea who we were, what we were. Our album wasn't out yet. And by the end of the show, they loved it. And a number of different places, they were even chanting our band name. So we are different than Helloween. Helloween, you know, they're not a theatrical band. We're a theatrical band. So do we have to do it? No. If there are bands that are similar, that might work. You know, but we would do different things. So if we did different runs, maybe one time we would do it with other similar types of groups. I personally would love for us to perform with a good friend of mine, Sean Peck.
Dennis Page.
Sherman. You know, yeah. That would be great. That would be a great double billing. But you know what? Everybody has to be on board for that. But then there's, you know, the band Attic, like you said. Mm-hmm. I'm a fan of Attic. I like them. I think
they're
great.
Yeah, great band.
They sound just like Merciful Fate, young Merciful Fate. Awesome. They're actually, I think they sound more like King Diamond, Merciful Fate, than we do. But I think we sound, if I had to look at it objectively, I would say we are, if we do sound like King Diamond at times, we're more progressive. We're a little heavier. And there are songs that I sing, I don't even sound anything like King Diamond. You really have to
That's
listen
correct.
To the whole
right.
record.
Right.
But it's done purposely. It's done because the music, not only the music, but the vocals carry the mood from song to song, from chapter to chapter. And going back to going live with different types of bands, I don't care personally whoever we play with, just as long as they're cool. They're cool, they want to have a few drinks. we get to meet some people and have a great time and enjoy it, because this is what we love to do. And we just love to meet new people that do the same thing, maybe a little different than we do, but we get, you know, we meet new people, we, you know, have great new experiences, and that's really what it's about.
Have you ever been booked to perform? Somebody booked you and you didn't handle it yourself. And have you ever been booked to perform where it was not a metal show and thus no one really knew what was going on when you were on stage? Aside from the fact of the Helloween thing, like, it's not even a metal show. I mean, like, I don't know, were you booked at anything from like a town festival or a block party or a fair or whatever? I mean, has that ever happened where you go out there and you know when you go out there, like, they don't even know what metal even is, much less what we do? Has that ever happened to you?
Yes, that actually happened to me. Not with them, not with Cold Steel, But when I was in high school, I was in a band called Overdrive. Original name, right?
Oh, yeah. There's never been another band called Overdrive before, right?
Yeah, right. Never. So we booked, actually, we played a church festival, and we were playing covers from, like, Metallica, Anthrax, Megadeth, stuff like that. And, you know, we were kids, but we played. People started to mosh, and they shut it down. And the funny thing is, back at that time, that was like 1986, I believe, and Cold Steel, the band that I joined in 87, Cold Steel, I was friends with them. And Cold Steel was supposed to perform the next day, but the church shut it all down. So they never got to play that show because Cold Steel was from a neighboring town. And they came to watch us play, or some of the members, and we played. People started moshing, and mothers and children were getting knocked around. It was crazy. There was a lot of people there. So the church shut it down. So Cold Steel didn't get a chance to play the next day.
Well, they repaid you in kind by having them lose out on their show. Hey, just join the band, whatever. You're good enough for us, you know.
We borrowed equipment from Cold Steel. I'll never forget. We borrowed equipment, and they weren't too happy at the time. It's funny. Yes, that has happened, and they thought we were just like rock and roll. And we go up there. We're playing Anthrax. We were playing Indians.
Oh,
you know,
nice!
And people just started moshing.
Well, you have to. It's Indians after all. What else are you supposed to do? Of course, war dance, man.
Of course.
War dance. Yeah. 6 minutes after 11 p.m. This is Black Knight Meditations, WSCA Portsmouth 106.1 FM. I'm talking with Troy, the mastermind behind them, and so. Let's see. I think we've already clarified that you've never been booked at them has never been, say, like a town fair or anything like that. No bar mitzvahs. Although, wow, that would be interesting. So
no, but there was actually, I have to tell you, we were almost booked by a club in Europe for this upcoming tour. Our booking agent, his name is Guy from TRF Booking Agency, based in Belgium. And he told me this story, and I started to laugh. He said that one of the clubs called back when they first said, okay, we'll take them. We'll take them. We want to book them because the dates started filling up. The club owner or the promoter called back our booking agent and said, this is them from the 60s, right? You know, like Van Morrison, because that was them.
Wow.
And no, you know, they're like, they're dead. You know, it's not the same.
Well, hey, you look dead on stage, so, you know.
Yeah.
Talk about resurrection, right?
He came back.
Bringing back from the dead. There you go, man. That's what you're doing. That's what the show is.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So, okay, let's talk about, obviously, you've got to have some inspiration for what you do. You've touched on that. What about your inspiration for what you do with them that has no connection to metal whatsoever? I mean, what inspires you to either create this this presentation, the visual presentation, the music, but what is the inspiration that has nothing to do with metal? I mean, I'm sure there is something. What is that that has no connection to heavy metal music?
Well, my children might have something to do with that. I have three children. Two boys and a girl, two of them older. My daughter's now 15. My daughter and my children have been involved with theater and show choir and chorus and music and, you know, throughout their whole entire high school years. And I always tried to involve them. I wanted to do something where I could involve them and get them excited about music, not necessarily heavy metal, because, you know, they need to figure out what they like and what they want to do, but I would involve them. And the biggest thing for me was Halloween. I loved Halloween. My kids loved Halloween. What kid doesn't like Halloween? They all love Halloween. So I said, how can I combine it where it could be just so much fun, where you can have your Halloween display on stage. And people have a great time. It would be a lot of fun. And you do it once a year. That was my idea. Once a year. And it just progressed. It progressed. It snowballed until it became them, ultimately. But initially it wasn't. I didn't have that in my mind whatsoever initially. I just wanted to do something where, you know, I could involve my children. They would have a good time. I'd have a good time. And, you know, there's, you know, they, and my two, my son, my older son, he worked at a haunted house every year, a big haunted house that we have out here called Gateway. And every year he worked it for many years. And I just thought I would go there. He'd scare me. And then tell everybody, hey, my dad's coming down, you know, just use his name, say, hey, Troy, and just, and mess with him. So it would be a lot of fun, you know, because it's something that they enjoyed, I enjoyed. And as things went, moved forward, it just evolved into something special.
What it evolved to is you created a new genre in metal, family metal. There you go.
Family metal.
Family metal, man. Involving the kids. Hey, there's nothing wrong with that. I think that's a great, that's the best inspiration possible, period. I mean,
actually, my daughter, she plays two roles on Sweet Hollow. She plays the role of Miranda, and she plays the role of Mary. And Miranda was KK's daughter. Originally, when I first started writing the song Forever Burns, which is really, aside from our intros, the opening track of the record, I recorded my daughter saying, Daddy, Daddy, save me. Back in 2013. Okay, so two years later, when we recorded Sweet Hollow, I had her record the other parts. So if you listen to that song, in the middle of, there's a breakdown in Forever Burns, and you hear, Daddy, Daddy, save me, and KK is saying, I can't save you, I can't save you. That's when she was 11 years old. Near the end of the album, there's a song, well, the last song of the album, and besides the last song, in the song you just played, Festival, that song, right before the solo, is my daughter singing. And the last song, when the clock struck 12, there's some banter that goes back and forth between possessed Mary and KK before the final confrontation, before the final exorcism, before the final incantations are recited. And that's my daughter reciting them. And there, it was, she was 13, right? 13 years old. And you can hear the difference in the tone. And it sounds like two different girls, okay? And it was done purposely because this is something, you know, I wanted her to be involved. And I brought it to the studio, and she loved doing it. She loved doing the voiceovers. She loved doing the minimal singing. She's got a fantastic voice, and she loves to sing. She doesn't love to sing heavy metal. She does like some King Diamond, though.
Of
and
course,
she's
naturally.
Just got a fantastic voice, and she wants to sing. She wants to, you know, she wants to sing pop. And I will support whatever she wants to do. She's a fantastic singer, and I would love her to do some more stuff. But you know, she kind of like wants to do her thing.
Again, family metal. That's awesome.
It
really is.
Talking the family.
Talking about inspiration. That's the best thing you could possibly have to inspire you is children. Absolutely, positively. But speaking of inspiration, you talked about the next Them record. You anticipate releasing that in 2018. It's going to be, I guess, part two, as opposed to something different. But having said that, given that it's part two, and we all know about part one now. Does the music, story aside, well, I guess not necessarily story aside, but does the music have to stay within the boundaries of what you established on Sweet Hollow, or can it be whatever you want it to be, or does it have to stay?
I'm a firm believer. If you have something that works, you want to use a similar formula. Similar. Okay? Everything was plotted for Sweet Hollow. Everything. The beats per measure for each song. Which song, when it was written in code. So let's say the first track was Them 01. The third track is Them 03. I'll give you an example. However, when the songs were written, music was written first. When I heard it, I would say, that's track five. The next track was given to me. That's track seven. It wasn't written sequentially. The only thing that was written sequentially were the lyrics. Okay, once the whole story, I had this huge whiteboard. Once I had it all mapped out, what was going to happen in each chapter, and I had song titles. I do my song titles. Sometimes when I write songs, sometimes I don't have a song title to the end. Sometimes I have it immediately. But in this particular case, for the most part, I had most of the song titles before the lyrics were even written. And then I wrote the lyrics sequentially from start to finish. And the same thing will be, more than likely, the same thing we're going to be doing with Matter of the Seven Gables, the next record, where we're looking to play an encore for our headlining tour in May, where I don't know the name of the song yet, so I can't even tell you what the name of the song is, but I can tell you it's track four on the record. I know for a fact it's track four. That's the placement, and it's going to be played as an encore. Great song. Love it. Loved it the second I heard it. And right now we have about, let's see, we have, we're going on track number five. So it's moving along.
All right, 2018, we're going to hear something that sounds similar enough to Sweet Hollows.
Well, actually,
right?
Structurally similar, but it will be heavier.
And why heavier?
Well, musically, it's going to be heavier.
Is it because of the lyrics?
I wouldn't say it's a darker record. I wouldn't say it's slower, but it's a dynamic record. Sweet Hollow as well. Not every song is played the same beats per measure. There's different time signatures that are used throughout the record for reason. It's the same thing here with the second record. Why? Because the music helps relay what's going on in the story at that particular moment in time. That's why, you know, and I will sing different. I'm not going to say it's going to sound completely different. With this particular project, I use falsetto voices more as flavoring than as primary. In few songs, it's on Sweet Hollow, it's used primarily. But in Manor of Seven Gables, there might be some songs that will be like that. And there'll be other songs that will just be for flavoring, layering. That's it. But like I said, everything is structured. When I would write songs for Cold Steel, I've written tons of songs for Cold Steel. I've recorded tons of demos and two albums. And a song was written, put aside. A song was written, it's put aside. And then, you know, we would figure out, hey, look, This would sound great as track two or track one, you know, totally different style of writing. And what makes this completely different is because the record is a concept record, Sweet Hollow. It's a concept record. Matter of the Seven Gables is a concept record. And the third record will be a concept record. And it's just a continuation of this journey of this troubled soul. And there's a beginning, there's a middle, and there's an end. And you have to try to continue with a similar structure, a similar formula, in order to achieve a similar success. You could deviate, but if you write a record that's completely different and doesn't make any sense to what's going on, I think you're going to lose people along the way. That's just my opinion. I've been lost. For some bands, I'm not even going to name names, but some bands in the past, I loved them. And all of a sudden, the next record came out. And I'm like, what? You know what? I will give you one example.
I was about to say, you got to cough up some examples. You can't do
I'll give you a great example. Back in the day, I loved Motley Crue. I was a kid. Loved Motley Crue. Shout out the Devil.
Right. I know where
one
you're going with this.
One of the best albums,
yep.
Right?
I know where you're going with this. Yep, yep.
I went the day Theater of Pain was coming out. We didn't have the internet. We didn't have any of that. We couldn't see or know what a record's going to look like or whatnot. I was at one of the East Coast famous record stores, Slip Disc Records in Valley Stream, and I cut school, and I stood there, waited for the store owner, Mike Schutzman, to come in and open up, because I wanted to be the first one to get the Motley Crue Theater Pain record. I get in there, I pick up the Motley Crue record, I look at it, and I say, "What the hell is this? What is this?" I lost all respect. I didn't even hear it. I went home, I turned it on, and I'm not going to deny, there's some classic songs on there, amazing songs, like Home Sweet Home, unbelievable song, you know. However, it wasn't my bag. I wanted Shout at the Devil. I wanted that Motley Crue, and they weren't there. They were now wearing makeup that, you know, even though they wore makeup and Shout at the Devil, it was different. They looked like girls.
Yeah.
And the next record after that
they
was
changed.
Appropriately titled. You know, well, I lost respect. Mm. I lost the momentum that I had for that group. And they gained a lot of fans and following from, you know, changing like that. And that's fine. I want to keep the focus. You know what? The other guys that are in this group, they're in different other projects. You know, you got guys that are in death metal, prog metal, thrash metal. They could go do what they have to do elsewhere. You know, we all are focused on this particular path because there's reason for it. And it's not like, oh, the next them record comes out, it's going to be completely different. I don't want that person that was me to walk into a record store, a CD shop, whatever, and say, "What the heck is this?" I don't want that. I experienced it. That was enough.
I think any metalhead on this planet, you listen to metal long enough, I guess it's for any genre really, but especially for metal, we've all been there. I know what you're talking about with Motley Crue, and yes, I mean, not even close. Shout crushes theater, no doubt about it. I mean, absolutely. I actually had a Theater of Pain shirt. I remember wearing that to school back in 86 all the time. But yeah, Shout, absolutely. I mean, obviously the next year people freaked out over Priest and Turbo. I mean, honestly, yep, five years before that, people had freaked out over Point of Entry. I mean, did it again. So, yeah, these things out. I mean, for me, I remember being in the record store in 96, and I couldn't wait to hear the new Queensryche record. And this Here and the Now Frontier garbage, or 97, 96, 97, whatever it was, awful. I was laughing out loud in the store because they had these little CD racks on the wall where you can listen to new releases back then where you listen to CDs at a store when there were stores. And I was laughing out loud. I remember seeing the guy working behind the register staring over at me wondering why I'm laughing. It's because I'm laughing at how ridiculously awful this pile of crap was called Here in the Now Frontier. Like this song Cuckoo, track number 2. I was just like, these guys put out the greatest heavy metal EP, the Queensryche EP in history. I mean, it just blew my mind. So I've been there, and other bands, sure. I mean, I have to say Queensryche was the biggest shock for me. I hear what you're saying, and I can say, as a fan, thank you. I mean, I like it when bands try new things and branch out, but I also like it when bands stick to their guns, too. There's something to be said for that. So thank you for that. So no pop music on the next record. Awesome. So now, do you...
I also feel that way, me personally. I was a huge, huge, huge Metallica fan. Huge.
Uh-oh.
Huge. And at one particular point, I lost it. I'll always love them, you know, for what they helped create. I mean, you know, they created a new subgenre that, you know, escalated them into a new stratosphere. You know, they are part of history. You can never take that away from them. But, like, and they've done a lot of different things, but... Now I look at the TV and I see Lady Gaga. What? They're playing with Lady Gaga now? Like, I'm not even talking about a once-over. I'm talking about they're talking about actually doing a tour with her singing. I'm done. I'm out. See ya. And you know what? There's going to be other diehard fans that are going to feel the same way. And will I listen to them? Sure. But I'm not forking up $250 to go see them live. Just not. And I had the utmost respect. Metallica was just amazing for me. It was amazing. Once I lost interest in Motley Crue back in the day, then it was Metallica. It was Metallica, Testament. It was just Anthrax. I'm a thrash guy.
Same here, man. I remember back in the day. I'm actually one of those guys that supported Metallica on the Black Album tour. I loved the Black Album back then. I saw them three times on that tour, and when a lot of people jumped ship because it was a commercial record, but the songs were there, so that's why I liked it. But I hear you, man.
Oh no, I like the Black record too.
Cool. Yeah, everything after that. Record. Everything after that, no, no, just no. I know.
Death Magnetic was. They were trying.
Well, yeah, they were trying.
And this last record is pretty good, but I just don't. I'm not a fan of Hetfield's voice anymore.
No, I'm not.
I'm just not a fan. I mean, there's still obviously a huge influence in the music scene, but there's the anger, the hunger is not there anymore. You know, I mean, you could hear it when you compare. You know, something from like Kill 'Em All, Justice, you know, Master of Puppets, any of them, Ride the Lightning, it doesn't matter. There's a hunger. You know, there's a certain element of hunger that they lack on anything after.
Oh, of course. Of course. They grew up.
Just with Bob Rock.
They grew up. They moved on. Hey, good for them, whatever. You can't always. No one really stays the same unless you're AC/DC. So, you know, hey, all the power to them. That's why we keep going back to those old records, you know, as opposed to us listening to James singing No Remorse, Baby. You know, it's like, nah, it's okay. We'll pass.
I'm a huge Megadeth fan. So from day one, you know, I loved Megadeth. I loved Metallica. And you know what? Mustaine kept it going. You know, there's some bum music here and there from Megadeth. Nothing, you know, not everything is unbelievable. But overall, I love Megadeth's structuring. I love their music is just fantastic. And I listen to a lot of the different a lot of Megadeth's material. I'm just in awe. I love it. You know, but Metallica had their, you know, they have the huge hits that nobody could take that away from them.
Absolutely. Do I miss the old days? Sure. But, you know, no matter what either of those bands tried, even with Megadeth, I mean, Endgame was pretty damn good. I think Dystopia is overrated. But, you know, we will always have the classic records. And there you go. I'm going to ask you a couple of what would consider to be typical questions. But I'm going to give them a little bit of a them spin. All right. So
sure.
I just like to.
You like the twisting thing.
I do. It's like, look, I'm a fan first. I may be a radio DJ for I don't know how many years now, but I'm still a fan first. And I love metal, and I only interview musicians whose albums I like. You know, if I didn't like your music, you wouldn't be on the air with me right now. You'd have to talk to somebody else. But
I'll say thank you then.
I choose who I talk to. Nobody's telling me what to do or what to play. This is all on me. So when the opportunity came up, I'm like, yeah, absolutely, I'll talk to them. But at the same time, I read and listen to a lot of interviews, and you get a lot of the same crap over and over again. So I'm like, okay, I get why those questions are asked, but you know what? Put some spins on them. So a little bit of a spin here, just to add a sort of them element to it. You know, you've heard about the whole What's Your Deserted Island album, that kind of thing. How about this? You are cursed to dwell eternally in a graveyard. What are your only two graveyard albums?
Only two graveyard albums.
You're dwelling in the graveyard eternally, dude.
Oh.
At midnight, it's dark. You're all alone. Nobody knows you're there forever. And you got two things to hear in that lonely, empty graveyard at night.
Well, and I could pick two albums?
Yep, two.
Well, for me, it would have to be Number of the Beast and Act of God from Snow White.
Oh, nice choice. Oh, nice. I've been playing that album here on WSCA since we've been on air. And it's like, how does anybody not remember this? Yeah, granted, it didn't really sell. No one really remembers it. But damn, that's a great record. Thank you. I love Act of God. Great record.
Oh, Act of God?
Yeah.
God is one of the best thrash records.
Absolutely. That record is awesome. I love Act of God. Is it like original or like something stupendously written? No, it just works. It rules. I love that record. Good choice. I would take that over Number of the Beast, honestly. I actually think Number of the Beast is made. I think Number of the Beast.
I just figured what something classic and something thrash.
Awesome.
That's
thank you.
Classic metal and thrash metal, because like awesome. I said, I'm a thrash head. So.
Well, me too, and I love that album. And I was gonna go there and say, when it comes to the Bruce Dickinson classic era, Number of the Beast is my least favorite. It's got some great songs, but it's always gonna be Somewhere in Time for me. All right, so let's do
a great record too.
Oh yeah. So you're another little spin here. Let's say you're locked away in a rundown, overcrowded asylum. What famous metalhead would be your padded cellmate?
Metalhead or musician?
Metalhead.
Metalhead.
It can be a musician. It could be somebody who's metal. Who's in that padded cell with you?
Padded cell. Are they like right next to me, or they're like?
Oh no, you're stuck there. You're stuck there with them. That's the whole point of this is that you're stuck, in an asylum. So that's what makes this not just like, oh, man, I'd love to hang out with Ronnie James Dio. I would, too. But, you know, well, think about that. Yeah, padded cell.
And it's someone who's famous.
Yeah. Because if you said, you know, your buddy Joe down the block, the hell's okay. Joe down the block?
No, it'd have to be someone famous. All right. Yeah. So I would have to tell you, it would have to be Monty Connor.
Oh, okay. A&R. All right. A&R Roadrunner.
He was A&R for Roadrunner. A&R for Nuclear Blast Entertainment, U.S. Division. Monty and I, like, we could talk for hours about music, about different things, and he would have me laughing and rolling and cracking up, and I would crack him up because I'll sing like King Diamond because he's a big King Diamond fan. I'll make him laugh, and we would just make each other laugh, so... It would have to be him. To be him.
Oh, I'm sure he's got a lot of stories to tell. Plus, you can put him on the spot and, you know, by saying something like, why the hell did you release so many awful albums on the Roadrunner label over the years, man? You worked so many awful albums. Hey, it made the label money and made a lot of bands famous, but come on. I think you and I are probably on the same page here with some of that stuff. Ugh. Ugh.
I have a very funny, quick story to tell you.
Yeah,
about
yeah, do it.
When I met him back in 2011... Hal Patino, formerly of King Diamond, had played with the King Diamond version of them, the King Diamond tribute version band of them, for four shows. While he was staying here and performing the four shows with us, he wanted to go visit Monty. And we went. We went in, and a friend of mine, Rick Ernst, who was doing video production at the time at Roadrunner, facilitated the whole thing, and Rick was also the director of the documentary Get Thrashed, and Rick was a fan of mine, of my group Cold Steel, not mine, but my band Cold Steel back in the day, and I've just been friends with Rick ever since that day when we were kids. So Rick got us in, and the first time I meet Monty, he has this, you know, pretty big office, he has this huge stereo in there, gold and platinum records all over. He says, take a seat. He talks to Hal for a few minutes, Hal Patino. And when I'm sitting there, I look at his desk, and he has this huge mug, okay, that's purposely facing the row of chairs that are in front of his desk, and the mug says, your demo sucks. That's what the mug said, and I'm like, wow, this is going to be great. This is going to be fun, because I'm not there for a record deal. I'm not there to try to, you know, convince him to take our act and do something with it. I'm there just hanging out. So after he's talking with Hal Patino, he looks at me. And this is how we first started talking. And he says, so, you're the guy who claims he could sing like King Diamond. I don't believe you. Prove it. This is how we started. And I said, sure. And I just started singing. And he laughed. And he chuckled. He says to my friend Rick, Rick, go get a camera. We got to get this online. So he videotaped this segment that they put it on Roadrunner's website, and it went viral. It actually went viral, and it was him trying to stump me, saying, sing this from this song, you know, sing Abigail, sing this, sing that, and I'd sing whatever he wanted to sing. And you know, he then came to see our last show with Hal Patino, second to last show, at it was called Gramercy Theater in New York City. And he came up to me and he says, "You know what? You guys sound awesome. King should hear you. You know what, Troy? One day, I'm going to introduce you to King." This is what he said to me. And I said, "That's awesome. Thank you so much. You know, I would love that." I didn't think anything would happen. Monty wound up getting let go when Atlantic Records purchased Roadrunner. And on his last day, my friend Rick said, "Look, Monty, you know, and some of the other bigger guys, A&R guys there, they were asked to leave. Can you come down and dress like King Diamond and cheer him up and make him laugh?" I said, "Sure." So I went there. I did that. And Monty once again said to me, "I'm going to introduce you to King." And I said, "Okay, cool, whatever." He gave me this unique conspiracy cover, okay, that's really the inside artwork that were only six of them were made. He gave one of them to me.
Awesome.
The singer from Ghost, he gave one. He had two of them. He gave one to the singer of Ghost, and he gave one to me. And he says, "This is a gift to you." I said, "Thank you very much." Didn't think anything else. Well, fast forward to 2015. King Diamond was playing in New York City. And we had made a plan to go see the band, go see King Diamond. Myself, Rick, Monty, and another A&R rep that used to work with Monty, who actually signed, I think his name was Todd. He signed Exodus as one of the bands he signed. So we're eating dinner, and we go across to the venue when it's time. And Monty comes out of nowhere. He disappeared. He comes back. He says, "Come here." He slapped a VIP sticker on me and Rick. He took us to King Diamond's dressing room, and he says, "King, this is Troy. He's the guy I was telling you about, King. Troy, do it now." He wanted me to sing.
That's
so
wild.
I sang a piece of A Mansion in Darkness.
Oh, good song.
To King Diamond. And I did it. I did like one of it's the third verse, I believe, where it's really high. And I did it on the spot, drop of a dime. And King laughed. And he said, when I did it, he said, he laughed and he said, now try to do that every day and tell me, how you feel, And everybody was laughing. There was like 30 people in the room. It was really funny. It was a surreal experience. And Monty, him and I, we communicate, we talk. I've met him a few times. He sat down when the Cold Steel America Idol was being mastered. He just came up. He just appeared. He came in and, here I had Ted Jensen, one of the world's most renowned mastering engineers, mastering America Idol, and then Monty just walks in. It was awesome. It was just a surreal experience. Monty's a great guy. He could be tough, but he's a great guy and, down-to-earth guy. And, he kept his word. He promised me, and he kept his word. And I met King because of him. And it's King. And I appreciated it.
That's awesome, man.
It was awesome.
That is really cool.
Monty would be the guy who I would be locked away in the padded cell with.
Awesome. That is very cool, and it makes total sense. Very cool, man. Thanks for sharing that story. Thanks for telling us about them. The new record is Sweet Hollow, out now. Again, Troy, thanks for your time. This has been a great discussion. We've been talking like almost an hour, and this has been very cool, man. Thanks a lot for your time, and we're going to hold you to a new record in 2018, dude. You got to do it. You got to make it happen.
Oh, yeah, you got it. The Seven Gables.
There you go. And you can't change the album title either.
Nope.
Don't do it.
Oh, it won't be changed.
No stylistic changes. Family metal all the way, man.
Family metal.
All right, take care, brother.
You got it.
All right, man. Have a good
night.
Thanks
for having me. Peace.